If you're a church leader, you know that volunteers are busy. They're always on the go. So trying to get them into a room for training is next to impossible. The brand new version of Ministry Grid gives you the ability to meet your people where they are and train anyone, anywhere, at any time. With a new mobile-friendly design, Ministry Grid puts training in the pockets of those who need it, wherever they are and whenever it's convenient for them. Ministry Grid also offers 750 courses for every role in your church so that you can use it right out of the box or customize it by adding your own content to complement what we have already put together. To get started for free, just go to ministrygrid.com. Once again, that's ministrygrid.com. Now, enjoy our podcast. You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
And we do have a very good friend on today, Mr. Danny Franks.
And we're not just saying friend. He is actually a friend.
No, like we're... It's real this time.
Yeah, it is real this time, unlike other times.
No! Everybody that we've said is a friend is a friend.
Yes, for sure.
Except for that one guy.
Yes, that one guy we'll never have on again.
No, he'll never be on again. All right, but Danny Franks, if you've been on Grid, he's like famous because he does all our guest services training, and for good reason. He's kind of best in class at that.
Is that kind of like... Internet famous, like Grid famous, Twitter famous?
It could be.
So he's Grid famous?
He's Grid famous.
Danny is Grid famous. But he is actually famous outside too.
He is famous.
In the guest services world.
Infamous.
Yes, even.
So anyway, the big thing to know is he is a friend and he knows guest services very well and in fact has a book coming out on guest services. It's the time of year where... One of the key times of year, Easter's coming up when we welcome a lot of guests through our doors. And his book is called People Are the Mission. And that's really the first time that we had Danny in to do training content. I remember him talking about, it was the theology. He opens up with the theology of guest services. And I was like, oh, I think I'm going to like this guy.
Yeah, because when you talk about guest services, it's super easy just to go to the pragmatics and, well, you're supposed to do this when they go like this, and this is the process, this is there. And Danny does get there. He's super practical, but he does start off with the theology, and that's what we appreciate about him.
Good deal. So his book also kind of looks like Saturate, except for colorblind people or something. I'm colorblind, so I can say it, right? I mean, it looks very similar, Danny. I'm not gonna lie.
There's definitely a swirly effect. So I was thinking about getting with Vanderstelt, and Mancini's got one coming out that also has a very
swirly.
Yeah, swirly factor coming in. And so if I could get those two guys to go on like a hypnosis world tour, that would be the perfect setting. Nobody understands what we're talking about because they can't see the book covers. But if they know Saturate, they have a good idea.
Yeah, it's basically like a Target, except...
right.
Yeah, so you can go to peoplearethemission.com. But Danny, before we get into our five questions, why don't you just give us a little synopsis of the book?
Wait, no. I need to go back and address this whole conference confab thing that he's talking about. You can't call it a swirly confab. Nobody will come to a swirly confab.
Yeah, that brings back a lot of painful middle school memories. That's just not, you can't.
Yeah, it depends on which side of the swirl you're on.
That's true.
That's right.
If it's painful, I think we know which side you were on, Danny.
Yeah, Todd, were you dispenser or receiver? Which one, what was your role?
Well, let's put it this way. I was like a chunk. So there was nobody that was around my age that could have picked me up.
That's a good defense mechanism.
Force that swirly.
Yeah. And I just breakdance my way out of it. So. All right. So give us the synopsis before we get into our questions.
Yeah. So People Are the Mission. It is really designed to help churches think through both why and how they do guest services. Like Todd said, it is very much, there's a lot of theology in there of the reason that churches should be very intentional about it. But then there's also a lot of practicality there as well. I think in my goal in writing the book, The biggest thing that I was trying to do is to help churches of all sizes and stripes figure out who they are and how they think about this. So as I've talked to different people and learned from different churches and all that, if I'm painting with a really broad brush, I think that there are two types of churches that we see. You know, there are those that really put guests at the center of their universe. And so everything that they do around the weekend revolves around the guest. Mm. We want to make people happy. We want to make them come back. You know, some people would refer to that as kind of the Six Flags Over Jesus model. We want to have a shuttle system that rivals Disney World and all of that. There are some really, really good things that we can learn from churches who are putting guests at the center of their universe. But then at the other end of that spectrum are churches that really are relying more on the traditions and foundations of their faith to bring people in and keep people in. Now, to be very clear, I believe that we should hold to the traditions and foundations of our faith. I believe that Scripture should inform every single thing that we do. But a lot of times our guests, they don't start there. And so we've got to start more where they are and bring them along this spectrum to where they need to be. And so in that category, we would say that a lot of times churches think of guests as an afterthought. Hey, if they come, that's great. We're glad to have them. If they stick around, that's great. But we just want to really focus on, keeping things to the basics and all that. And I think that there is something in the middle. There's a healthy middle there. Authors always have a third way to do everything. So if there's way one and there's way two, hopefully way three is that middle ground that we're trying to pursue, where we're not keeping guests at the very center of our weekend experience, but we're neither forgetting about them and just hoping that they kind of get it as they come along. But we're honoring the gospel and honoring our guests all at the same time, and being reminded that, you know, people were the mission that Jesus had, and so they really ought to be our mission today as well.
Is it funny?
It is.
I mean, that's my question. I want to know if it's funny.
82% of the jokes land.
That's really good.
The other 18%, you're like, is he trying to be funny? Because he definitely failed.
Which outside research company did you use to get to that stat?
a lead pastor of mine who may or may not remain nameless. He's the judge of whether it was funny or not. He said he gave me the 82% number, so I feel better about it. Yeah,
you should feel that's solid, man.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. That should be the little quote on the front of the book.
Yeah, him endorse it that way.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's higher than a normal weekend sermon that I've ever preached. So I feel good. I feel like I'm getting where I want to be.
Good. Awesome. All right. Well, we actually do have real questions for you too.
Good.
So why don't we get started with those?
All right. So why don't we go straight into the first question, which is this: why should churches care about their guest service team and the first impression they make?
That's a great question. You know, I think sometimes I'm a little bit surprised at how many churches communicate that they just don't care. No church would ever say that. They would never articulate, we don't care about our guests, we don't care about the people in our community. But a lot of times that's an implied value that they kind of put out there, because they just don't have a plan for how they are actually going to reach the guests who are coming in on the weekend. And I'm talking really as much about how do we get people to come to our church, but when they come to our church, what is it that they experience? I've been in a lot of churches. I grew up in one of those great, wonderful, deep South Southern Baptist churches that, everybody knows everybody. Everybody loves everybody. If they don't know you, they at least know your mama or who her people were or whatever. I've never been to a church that you could not easily describe as a friendly church. Mm. But most of the time when churches are friendly, what that translates is that translates to we're friendly to each other. We're friendly to people that we already know. And it takes a lot for us to recognize that there is a difference between being friendly and being intentional. We've really got to think through how it is that we are training our people to walk across the room, to meet people that they've not met yet, to think about what people are experiencing when they show up for the first time. And, you know, I just believe that it's going to be really hard for somebody to connect to a sermon, the thing that we've put a lot of time, energy, and effort through the week to prepare for. It's going to be hard for somebody to connect to a sermon if they haven't first connected to you or connected to somebody in your congregation. And so we want to be able to give them that gift, that we've thought through it, that the message that we're preaching from the stage is going to match up with the message that they're receiving on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I love that, because you think about the importance of first impressions and the whole idea that, hey, everyone, I mean, of course our church is friendly. Look, I'm so friendly and you're right. So friendly, but the difference
between— We even have a time during the service. We make sure everybody feels welcome.
Yeah.
That's right. Right in the middle of the height of cold and flu season, we make sure that we shake hands.
Precisely. Yeah. Precisely. So, I mean, that distinction between what does it look like to be friendly to one another versus friendly to newcomers is huge, but also the fact that, I mean, thinking about just the whole idea of first impressions and how first impressions are so important. If the sermon is, I mean, the sermon is not your first impression, because it's like 30, 45 minutes into, you know, after you first walked into the building at least. So I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Now, Well, I think a lot of times too, sometimes we tend to think inside out. So we begin with the sermon, we begin with the worship, we begin with whatever the elements are of the service that we're trying to do. But it's like you said, Daniel, that's not the first thing that one of our guests see. And so instead of thinking inside out, we have to start thinking outside in. So we have to think about things like signage. What does our parking look like? Is it clear? Do people know where to go? Do they know where to park? Do they know what door to go into? Mm-hmm. And instead of making sure that we have a, you know, 55 person strong usher team inside the auditorium, well, that's great. If you can get 55 guys in matching suits, then be my guest, go for that. But you also need to have people on the outside of your building, because the outside of your building is the very first thing that your guests are going to see. So we need to be able to give those subtle cues to them that we've thought about your experience, and we want to get you further into a relationship, not just with our church, but a relationship with Christ.
Yeah, and even the fact that a lot of people are now listening to the sermon before they even come, if they have a good experience listening to the sermon, then when they come, you wouldn't want them to be put off by everything else until the actual sermon happens again, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
So what are the elements that you would say make up guest services? Because some people that are listening now, they're thinking, oh, is that greeters and hushers? Like, who? Like,
yeah. Did you just say hushers?
Oh, yeah. That's what I used to call them as a kid, because they told me to be quiet all the time.
That's good.
And put my shoes back on.
Yeah. For us in our context, that's going to look like anything from, you know, we say from the parking lot to the pew, from the street to the seat. So we want to anything that takes place off stage that doesn't have anything to do with the sermon or the worship itself, we are taking care of that from a guest services perspective. What I've seen sometimes is that churches will kind of split that out. They'll have, you know, their parking team or their first time guest team or whatever. But then they have those hushers that have been grandfathered in and they've been doing this job for 87 years. So a lot of times that can be a problem. If they don't understand the when behind why we're doing this, they kind of go on with business as usual and see their job as just collecting offering or passing out communion or whatever it is. And they haven't really thought about what does this particular part of my role, how does that speak to the overall experience that one of our guests is going to have this weekend?
Mm, good deal. So how do you communicate, you know, the vision of that you have for guest services? How do you communicate that to people?
Yeah, it's kind of like I just said. We really focus more on communicating the why behind the what, because we can pass out job descriptions all day long, but if people don't understand the heart behind that task, then they're going to just kind of show up and run through the motions and never really make a difference in anybody's life. So, you know, it's more about parking cars and passing out bulletins and pouring coffee. So a lot of times we've got to help our teams unlearn what it means to be a church usher or a church greeter, especially if they've done that somewhere else, so that they can relearn the foundational things that we want them to know. And I think, you know, that goes beyond just a simple team of volunteers. That's also helping the entire church become hospitable, because if you are just spoken to by the people that are officially on the team and have the name tags, and nobody after that speaks to you, well, that's a very mechanical experience. It's not organic in any way. These people are being nice to you because they're supposed to, not because they want to. So in communicating that and helping our people get that, I think a lot of times it starts with the way that the presence of guests is communicated to the entire church. So I'm a firm believer that pastors ought to address guests from the stage every single weekend, even if they don't have any first-time guests there, because if they address them every weekend, they eventually will be. Now,
so what does that look like, though?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll tell you what it doesn't look like. Okay. I don't think that means that you ask all of your first-time guests to raise their hand and you what? Put a big spotlight on them.
Yeah. No, they're supposed to stand.
Yeah, of course. Yes. How else will I know how to introduce? Yeah.
Where am I from? Here's the sin I'm currently struggling with. Like, oh, those are all the things that we don't want to do that.
Chapter 2 of your book.
No, that's right. But when I talk about addressing guests, I just simply mean acknowledging throughout the service that this is something that we are doing that can prove confusing to outsiders. I mean, think for a moment about baptism, and you know, we'll talk about baptism by immersion specifically. But you know, what are you communicating to the people in your crowd who are unchurched, never been in church before, when all of a sudden there are two people standing up in front of you in a pool of water? One of them puts his hand over the other one's face and then pushes them underwater for a few seconds, and everybody cheers for that. That, to the unchurched mind, that is a public drowning, and somebody needs to be calling 911, right? So taking 30 seconds before baptism to explain, this is what this is. This is the significance of this moment. To do that for communion, to do that for offering, to do that for whatever it is in the middle of the service, just helping people interpret what it is that they're seeing. And so when you talk to the congregation as though guests are present, then that plants in the congregation's mind that guests should be present. And so it makes them not only aware to reach out to the people that they may not know and speak to them, but also encourages them to invite their friends, unchurched, neighbors, whatever, to show up with them the following weekend.
So I love what you're doing right now, because you're talking about, you know, everything that a lot of us have thought of up to this point with guest services is mostly about the mechanics. And you know, some will have training, some won't have training, and I'll get into that in a little bit as far as questions for you. But you know, it really is culture forming. It is a culture forming element to guest services that you are discussing here. Is that correct?
It really is. And it's more than about simply being a part of a team. I believe that guest services ought to be an ethos that really transcends just a simple group of volunteers, that this is something that everybody in the church is about. Now, having said that, I don't think that we can adopt the mindset that everybody's a greeter, right? Because if everybody's a greeter, nobody's a greeter.
Right.
And we have to have some people that this is their role. This is the thing that they do on the weekend. But at the same time, yes, everybody should be a greeter, and we should all be, if there's somebody that we don't know, it should be our job to introduce ourselves to that person and to get to know them.
That's really good. Now, Danny is one of our coaches who does coaching with us for Leadership Pipeline, and we were recently out in California doing that, and we're actually going to be launching a learning community for kind of a longer term one for Leadership Pipeline. But the reason I bring this up, because when we do coach on Leadership Pipeline, guest services is often one of those areas that everyone relates to.
Yes.
And the whole idea of how do you move from volunteers to leaders of leaders, to ministry directors and senior leaders. And that's one of those examples where it's like, yeah, you got your usher and you got your, you know, your usher team leader, or maybe it's your service leader, and you have, so there's a lot of that happens. But when we think about that, right, and you think about every one of your volunteers and your leaders in your guest services ministry. You have them at different levels along the leadership pipeline. Why don't we focus on the volunteer level and just think, you know, for a guest services volunteer, like an usher or a greeter or a parking lot attendant or, you know, someone like that at the volunteer level where they're leading themselves. What are some of the qualities that you look for at that level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, first of all, one of the mistakes that a lot of church leaders tend to make is when they're looking for the right person to be on that team, they are immediately thinking about, you know, the extroverted, gregarious, hyperactive party squirrel. You know, they want the person who is always the life of the party and whatever. And I think some of the best people that we have on our teams are people that would really classify themselves more as introverts. They're not going to be the center of attention. They're not going to be the ones who are just who it's natural for them to wander right up to somebody and start talking and introduce themselves to a total stranger. But I think one of the questions that we have to ask when it comes to our volunteers or our potential volunteers is just simply, are they warm? Do they have a warm personality that draws people in and causes people to feel comfortable to kind of open up to them, to, you know, share information at a welcome center and jot down their email address or whatever? Does this seem like a person that I could have a friendship with? And if they have that, regardless of whether they're, you know, life of the party extrovert or whether they're a little bit more introverted, those are the kind of people that you want to have on your team. I think secondly, you want people who are very intentional about moving folks from point A to point B. So they're not, and different people's point A are going to be different things. Not everybody starts at the same place. You've got some people who are coming to your church that just moved from another city and they were very involved in church there, committed believers for many, many years. And then you have people who are from around the corner that have lived largely, you know, more of what we would qualify as an agnostic lifestyle or whatever, but they're just kind of exploring faith claims. Well, you're starting in different places. Their point A's are different, and so their point B is going to be different. And so are your volunteers able to help them to start where their guest is and then move them along that spectrum?
I like how you talk about the warm personality. Because a lot of times I've thought about guest services and volunteer recruitment from the perspective of introverts and extroverts. And right. It's really fascinating to think of the warm personality because I think I have a warm personality. What do you think, Todd? Okay, well, those I pastor think I have a warm personality, I think. But there's a big difference between my wife and I. My wife is a extreme extrovert and I'm a little bit in the middle. I'm a little bit more on the introvert side. It depends on the context. But when I think of guest services and anytime I've ushered and greeted, I'm a developer, right? So in my mind, I'm like, hey, this is why I'm doing this. Because I have this role, I mean, I'm not necessarily going to always naturally go there, but because I have this role, I'm going to be greeting people, I'm going to help people do this. And with that, it might not be natural for me, but I have that purpose and it kind of switches that on. So,
well, I mean, if you're too aggressively people oriented, you're going to have people that are looking over, like I greet you and then I look over your shoulder for the next person
yeah.
come along.
Yeah, you want a volunteer who has the ability to be fully present with that person for the time that they have with them.
So why do you think that some churches treat guest services positions as kind of just a place that anybody can serve? It's almost like if you have a heartbeat and a warm body, if you can fog a mirror, you can greet.
Yeah. So I think it is a little bit of a double-edged sword because honestly, you know, there's not really a high bar for a lot of the ways that we utilize volunteers in guest services roles. We talked a minute ago about job descriptions and, you know, how do you park a car? Well, there's an open space, put a car in it, right? It's not that complicated. So in a sense, anybody can serve on the parking team, but in another sense, it really takes a special skill to serve on the parking team. And so I think that a lot of times we do kind of think about it as this warm body mentality, when in reality, we need to constantly help people not only think about what they're doing, but the why they're doing it. Mm. And so that means that we've got to have a lot of intentionality in the way that we train our volunteers, the way that we coach them, the way that we move them along a pipeline to help them understand this is why you're here. Because what happens is you look up 30 years down the road and you've still got somebody who's serving in the same role and they're faithful. They show up every single weekend, do exactly what you ask them to do. But they're also the one that everybody in your church avoids going in their door because they're, you know, the grumpiest, grouchiest person that they've ever met. And, you know, all the kids in the youth group are making fun of them behind their back because nobody wants to be around them because they're scary. So they're doing what they're supposed to do, but they've forgotten the heart with which they're supposed to do it.
That's the Husher. I still have nightmares. The Husher. I do think that what's interesting that I would point out is when you said anybody can do it, I just think anybody can do it, but you need to be trained to do it. So when you said anybody can park cars, I did have a flashback to coming into our church one morning and there was a parking person that was trying to tell everybody where to go, and it was not working. Why? Because instead of pointing to the direction that they wanted them to go, they were waving around the wand in a circle. I mean, just as fast as they could go. It was just a circle. And you're like, okay.
Telling you to come in?
Yeah, saying to come in, but there's two different ways that a person could go. And so it's like, this is not helpful. I remember going back and addressing this issue with creating parking training out of this one incident I had felt the pain.
I agree with you that I think anyone can do it, but it does require training.
Yeah, you should care enough to have training.
Because I remember driving by this church and I had for our Wednesday night life group, we would have to drive by this church, like literally by the entrance to go to someone's house. And this church, there'd always be someone right on the edge of the parking lot. So you haven't even driven in, right? Like the edge, like just to get into the church. Dude, it was the creepiest thing. They had this smile on their face and they were waving. And I was like, yeah, I know you're trying to be welcoming, but I don't ever want to turn in because you look really creepy.
That's awful.
Oh, man. And it was like, because they were doing like the queen wave. And I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Well,
how do you feel about sign spinners?
Oh, man. If they do it well, I think they're phenomenal.
I do too. I think they're fun.
Yeah. But sometimes you got somebody that they try so hard.
I've never seen a sign spinner at a church.
Yeah.
Have you?
We've had one guy that I didn't keep him on the team nearly as long as I wanted to. He was, I think he wanted bigger and better things. Went for Best Buy or something. He's on a 6-lane highway.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, let's go to our fourth question then.
All right, yeah. Go.
How do you, when it comes to recruiting and building a team, mm-hmm. give us some good points or some best practices around recruiting and building? Because you're actually going to be speaking at our pipeline conference coming up in October, where the whole theme is on recruitment. So give us a little sneak peek.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think it works like any other team within the church. There's nothing that is necessarily setting guest services apart from kids ministry or worship or serving in the sound booth or whatever. But that is that we never stop asking. We never stop asking. And we're constantly looking for people who do not have a role to play somewhere, but yet have giftings and skill sets, and invite them to be a part of it, give them that job. And I think the way that we do that, you know, a lot of times we try to depend on stage announcements. And so, you know, we tell the pastor, hey, we need 6 more people to serve at the front door. And so can you make an announcement this morning? Problem with that is, I mean, stage announcements, they create awareness, but they don't really create any action. We don't see a lot of people, and we've studied this here. I mean, we just don't see a lot of people who translate from, hey, they just made that announcement that they need more people to serve in the nursery. And so now I'm going to go serve in the nursery. No, it's more of that one-on-one. I know you, I have a relationship with you, you're in my circle of influence. And so I know that you're showing up for the service, you're attending the service, you're leaving the service. And so let me invite you in to be a part of what it is that I'm doing here. And when it's one-on-one, it has a much better response rate and retention rate than one on 100 or one on 1,000 or one on whatever yeah. number you have per congregation.
Well, I mean, when you come right back to it, when we're talking about leadership pipeline, we're really thinking that the best person to recruit and develop a volunteer in your whatever ministry is a person who's already involved and engaged in that ministry. That's the best person because they can testify from a personal standpoint.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it does come back to helping people understand what I just said, that you have people in your circle of influence that I don't have in mine. And so you have friends, you have people in your small group, you have people that pass by you every single weekend that are going to know you and respond better to you than they ever will to me, even if I'm a staff member. So it's just helping volunteers understand, yeah, it's absolutely my job as a leader to be asking people to serve on this team, but it's also your job as a part of the team to ask people to serve on the team. So it's everybody's job.
Yeah, I think one last thing that I would add too is if you're going to have an announcement about a volunteer position in your church, any volunteer position, you have to preach that announcement. You can't just announce it. You know, do less announcements and preach the three that you do instead of having seven.
Exactly. And you cannot say this is easy. Anybody can do it. It's really not that big of a deal because people don't want to give their lives to easy, right?
They that's don't want, and not big of a deal. That's so good.
Yeah, why in the world would I want to give up extra time on my weekend or during the week, whatever it is, just to show up to something that's not that big of a deal? Make it huge. That's part of our training. Is we really we're trying to scare a few people off when they show up for this no obligation training. We want to create such a high vision for it that sometimes they're self-selecting out of it because they're like, I just can't give what you're asking. Because we really want to make it that big of a deal that we're impacting people's eternities in some ways, in the way that we are helping them connect to our church from their very first moments on campus.
Yeah. Yeah. To make an announcement to say it's not big of a deal.
That's easy. Anybody can do it.
Anyone, so come volunteer.
We're just looking at it.
That's so good. You don't have to know nothing to be a part of this team.
That's so good. All right. Well, let's go on to our last question then.
All right. I have so many jokes in my head right now that are just really bad. So I'm going to refer you.
Bonus content.
Yeah. What are some practical tips to welcome first-time guests? Like to genuinely, you know, warmly, as you stated, welcome guests.
Yeah. I think, first of all, for churches who are thinking about it, sometimes we're overthinking it. And it comes down to the question of what is it that I would want? When I go, whether it's to a church or to a new restaurant or to any new experience where I'm unfamiliar with my surroundings, what is helpful for me? So it's just utilizing the cues that we're getting from our everyday walking around life when we go to a new, you know, a new store or something, to be able to think through, okay, this was helpful and this was not helpful on their website. This was helpful and this was not helpful on their signage. It would have been really key if they could have provided this for me. So I think when we are thinking through the experience before we're asking our guests to have the experience, that you've already won 90% of the battle at that point.
That's good.
I think there's a lot of times that churches they really want their guests to remain anonymous for as long as their guests want to remain anonymous. I'm fine with that. Like, I don't think that there's a magic formula for when you need to ask your guests to let you know that they're there. But I think providing as many very clear, obvious on-ramps as you can, so that if they want to be known from the first 10 seconds, they can be. They can identify themselves that way. Or if they want to just kind of lurk a little bit for a few weeks or a few months, that's fine as well. But as soon as they're ready to kind of step out and let you know that they're there, it's very clear how they do that. So maybe that's a a first-time guest tent. Maybe that's a welcome center. Maybe that's signs saying to turn on your hazard lights. Whatever it is, they can identify themselves when they're ready, but they need to know how to identify themselves.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I love that because you're addressing both sides, right? You're addressing those who are saying, okay, you know, let's make it super easy for you know, to help guests get plugged in and for them to know where to go and what to do, but also giving them the freedom to be able to make that choice as well as to whether or not they want to be made known or not. But if they do want to be made known, they need to know where to go to be made known.
Right, exactly. And again, that goes back to the think outside in mentality. You know, sometimes we put our welcome centers 400 feet inside of a rabbit trail of hallways and, you know, multiple levels of a education building or whatever. Well, a guest is never going to find that. So put it where they'll see it, which a lot of times is going to be outside the front doors. You know, if your weather allows it, then put a very big visual cue outside so that guests know. And plus, that just gives them a very neutral zone to go to before they walk into a building they've never been to before. They don't know what's on the other side of your front doors. Are they walking into a lobby or to an auditorium or to wherever? So put it out there where they can access it more easily.
So do you think that the welcome center should be, let's say a church has two or three main entrances? Mm-hmm. Do you think there should be a welcome center at every entrance then?
I think you can avoid having to do that if you help your guests know where to go that is kind of their entrance. So if you have first-time guest parking that's clearly identified or whatever. But having said that, if we have more than one entrance at a campus, we're going to have more than one tent that is for our first-time guests because we don't want to leave that to chance. So even though we may have a 95% to 5% split on the amount of guests that show up at a particular tent because we've directed them. Still, for that 5%, that tent's presence is very important. And so we want to make sure that we've provided for them there.
So good. So good. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. People Are the Mission is the name of Danny's book. And I think you'll see that it's a great blend of theology and practice when it comes to making sure that that we are fulfilling the mission that God has called us to. So you can pick that up at Amazon, Lifeway stores, Barnes & Noble, CBD, eventually Dollar Tree.
True.
Or many other places.
That's right. Wait for Dollar Tree. It'll be cheaper there.
Sweet.
All right. You've been listening to the 5 Leadership Questions. Thanks for listening. Go over to iTunes, leave us a rating and review.